Something with you this afternoon that I haven't done for a long time, and that's have an open discussion of a couple of issues. Last time I was here with you, a brother who is here with us this afternoon handed me a couple of questions, and I thought it would be good just to discuss these from a scriptural point of view. So let's just think of this as a class and deal with it that way. The first one of his questions: what's in a name? Is Church of Christ the only name? Question one, what's in a name? Is Church of Christ the only name? Now, the person is not questioning the name Church of Christ. They're asking if this is the only name that we can use. What does your New Testament tell you about that?
We're the bride of Christ also.
We're the bride of Christ?
God.
Church of God.
Church of the firstborn.
Church of the firstborn ones.
The way.
The way. There are numerous scriptural names. That's the point that you're making. So I think we're saying, and I would concur, that Church of Christ is not the only name that the church can use. Scripturally speaking, there are a number of others. The Church of God is the most used name in the New Testament by quite a bit. Every few pages, it seems like the Apostle Paul is referring to the Church of God. And if I didn't think you were fairly familiar with those, I'd run through the list, but I think that you are, and that nobody would question that it's called the Church of God. So it would seem that we are permitted to use any scriptural name that is honoring to the Lord. Actually, the word church comes from a Greek term, ekklesia, which can easily and well be translated as assembly. So rather than just Church of Christ, it could also be called the Assembly of Christ or Assembly of God. When we start using some of these other names, we run into some post-apostolic problems. By that I mean this. In the first century, when these things were being said, all these names applied to one group of people that was well understood, the people of God, and there was only one church. Now today, that there are hundreds of churches, and some of these names have been selected by some of them, we could create considerable confusion if we would go out and change our sign to Assembly of God. It's not that that would not be a scriptural name. It certainly would be a scriptural name. But we would be giving a misleading impression to everybody who drove by, or at least to a substantial number of the people who drive by. People would come here expecting the denomination known as the Assembly of God, and we'd have to meet everybody at the door and explain to them, now, we're not what you're expecting. We're using it as a scriptural name. I mean, why subject the people around us, and why subject the churches to that kind of confusion? So I don't think it would be wise for us to change our signboard to Assembly of God just because of this kind of a post-apostolic problem that we have in our time. But that doesn't mean that it wouldn't be a scriptural name. You can use a scriptural name sometimes to a confusing effect, and God is not the author of confusion. So I don't think that anybody would insist that the Church of Christ is the only name that the church can use. Actually, we do use a number of names. In common parlance, we refer to ourselves by these names. But when we're considering what to call ourselves to the world, I think Church of Christ, under the circumstances, is the best that we can do so that we don't create a confusion. And I'm not sure why this question was asked, but I do know that in our own time, there are lots of churches, denominational churches around us in the world, who are changing their names to vaguer monikers than they have had in the past, partly to conceal what their doctrine is. We have churches that have been the traditional denominational titles for years, changing themselves now to words like the well and these types of things. And you don't know what that means. You go to that church, you have no idea what they stand for doctrinally. Whereas if you go to one that says Methodist or Lutheran, you have an idea what they stand for doctrinally. The idea is to get away from the doctrinal emphasis and just be a community of believers, as they would say. So I don't think that's particularly good, because it's confusing the issues all the more. And we need to have all the clarity we can about the doctrine of the church, what the church stands for, what it does not stand for, what it will allow and what it cannot allow. So I'm not sure what was behind this question, but that is a way towards answering that question.
Well, if we look at the overall picture, for instance, Church of Christ, how many variations are there of the Church of Christ?
Mm-hmm.
As you say, the name is confusing. If we want to talk about what's in the name, say, scriptural names, all right, Methodist, is that a scriptural name?
Absolutely not.
Baptist?
No.
Here we're talking some of the largest religious organizations.
Right. That's absolutely true, and it's always been fascinating to me how those names came about. John Wesley was leading a very methodical life. He had a new method of approach to life. And so his followers coalesced and crystallized around that concept, and that's how they came up with the Methodist Church. If he'd had a new wrinkle, it could have been the Wrinkless Church. And it's just that simple, how that name came about. He was not particularly fond of that name, by the way. Some people call themselves the Wesleyan Church after him. On the way out to where I live, I pass by on 50 Highway, as do some of you, a building that says Martin Luther Lutheran Church. They got his name in there twice. And I hope it's all right for me to be using these examples. They got his name in there twice when Martin Luther himself said that the church should not be called after him. Martin Luther was not crucified for you. And this was his position. But yet, after you die, they can call themselves whatever they want in your honor. So this would have not been either Wesley's or Luther's desire. And these names should not be used for the Lord's church. That's absolutely true. But there are certain scriptural names that can be used. Church of Christ is probably about the best we can do in view of modern circumstances. Yes, there are divisions within it. One of the differences between divisions in churches of Christ and divisions in churches generally is that the churches of Christ have divided over what the Bible says and how to apply the Bible. These are divisions over understandings of the Bible. Whereas in the religious world, the divisions were often over political issues. The Reformation churches were still national churches. The Lutheran Church was the national church of Germany and several other countries, as I think you know. So these were political entities almost as much as they were religious entities. Martin Luther became a kind of a political figure, at least later in his life. Whereas the Lord's Church really has nothing whatsoever to do with politics. It's a purely spiritual organization. So there are differences here. I don't know how we would do any better than to use the name Church of Christ, even though there can be confusing resulting from it. Yes, thanks.
When we use divisions, do you think that sometimes we denominate ourselves?
It's possible that we can denominate ourselves. We actually would be denominating ourselves by insisting on one name to the exclusion of all other scriptural names. That would tend to make it a denomination, because the expression denomination just means that you have given a name to it. I don't know of any of us that insist on the name Church of Christ as the only name that can be used for the church. We all allow, as you were saying a while ago, that we can refer to this as Church of God, just as Paul did to the Ephesian elders, just as Paul did to Timothy, to take care of the Church of God, he told Timothy. So I think we all are fully conversant with this, that there are a number of names that we can use. And in this way, by using those various characterizations, we keep from denominating the church. Chad.
I think there are those today that are leaving the name Church of Christ so that they can incorporate other things into their being
right. That
are not the same doctrine. For instance,
that's
instrumental
true.
Music or many other different things, practices of offices and functions of the church and so forth. They're leaving the Church of Christ name and calling it just different things like groves or some other practice or other. And I think that's a sad situation.
It is.
Now, they're out in defense of that. There are places where the Churches of Christ have been so overbearing in some areas.
That's true.
And ridden so hard over their people that they have left a bad impression, and that's not good either. But that doesn't give you a right to make the change.
Well put. I appreciate that very much. Yes, there are places where churches of Christ, so-called, have been so overbearing in the community, have stood for things that aren't even biblical in some cases, and have given a bad flavor to that name. And the way to overcome that is to be different. But that, I agree completely, that doesn't give us a right to change any of the names that the Lord has given us in the Scriptures. Romans 16:16 still says the churches of Christ salute you, and we still ought to be able to say the same thing and use that expression. If in some community the church has given the impression, a bad name to that title, then we need by our interaction with the community to change that. But that doesn't mean we change the name, one of the names that the Lord gave to His church. Well put. And Chad also spoke to the idea that some churches of Christ are changing their name. It seems to broaden out the base and to allow people from denominations to feel more comfortable bringing in often Calvinistic and other kinds of unscriptural doctrines. And that's not good at all. That does not portend well for the future of those groups. What's going to happen to them, if it hasn't already, is that they're just going to blend into the denominational world. That's where we came from. And that's not where we want to go back to. We should hold up the light of the Bible to the denominational world and show them how to be more scriptural by our words and practices. The Apostle Paul even went so far as to say in 1 Corinthians 11 that there must needs be heresies among you, show that it can be seen which ones are approved among you, which ones among you are approved unto God. And that's really the core of the church. And sometimes it's a relatively small group. But we ought to be satisfied with that and not change the name of the church in order to have an influx of people who don't really understand the Bible anyway. We ought to be teaching them and helping them, and they ought to have a good attitude toward the Scriptures so that we can be more scriptural. It all goes back to what God has told us in the Bible. But most religious people, and I say this with due consideration, most people who are religious under the general banner of Christianity as it's used by the world don't really care very much about what the Bible says. This is what I find every week. They don't really care very much about what God has said in His Word. And with that kind of an attitude, we cannot grow closer to God. Denny, sorry.
Yes, this is an example that we had recently. And it's not exactly on this line, but it's similar. Brother Joel, the missionary, as you want to call him, Mexico.
Okay.
You read the last email?
Yes.
And my translation?
Yes.
He's having an issue down there with a group out of Mexico City that came out and started talking to the part of his congregation, pressing the one cup deal and saying, if you're not a one cupper, you're not right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. And that has been a problem of a division that I think should never have occurred. And yet we don't change the name of the church just to get away, to try to dissociate ourselves from that. We study with those brethren and with others and try to teach the truth of what the Bible said. Very good. I appreciate that. We've got one more question here. And time is slipping away. I appreciate that discussion. Let's discuss this one. This is a very good one as well. I think at first it was asked, what is an idol? But then maybe it's been changed to, when is an idol an idol? And the brazen serpent is referenced here. When is an idol an idol? The idea being, I think, was the brazen serpent an idol? Because it sure seems physically like an idol, doesn't it? And I know you're all well familiar with this story. It's found in the book of Numbers, chapter 21. You remember, this was right after Aaron died, and they were at Mount Hor. Maybe I should read a few verses here just to familiarize ourselves with it. Numbers 21, verse 4. They journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom, and the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. And the people spake against God and against Moses, Wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth this light bread. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among them, and they bit the people, and much of the people of Israel died. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, We have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he may take away the serpents from us. And Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said unto Moses, in verse 8, Make thee a fiery serpent, and set it upon a pole. And it shall come to pass that every one that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live. And Moses made a serpent of brass, and put it on a pole. And it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. Okay, what about that? Was this brazen serpent an idol? If it was, then why would God command it? And if it wasn't, then how come it seemed so much like an idol? What's up with this? Anybody want to comment on it?
They made an idol out of it.
They did make an idol out of it. And this is a...
Drug it around for several years.
Yeah, they had it for a long time. And eventually they did make an idol out of it. Very important point. We don't find the denouement of this until over in the Kings. That's how long it was. Here, we're clear back in Numbers here. But it's in Kings. And it's 2 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 4. Or I'm sorry, that's not exactly right. Yes, that is right. 2 Kings 18, verse 4. That at this point, then, they were offering incense to this brazen serpent. And they had to get rid of it because it had become an idol. Was it an idol at first? No, it wasn't an idol at first. This was what God commanded at first. David.
Anything can be an idol.
Right.
It's not the thing. It's our attitude toward it. If we care more for that, or if it becomes the central part of our life,
right,
then we have turned a light fixture into an idol.
Absolutely.
Or we've turned a piece of one of the badminton things down on at the Nelson Gallery out on the lawn.
Right.
You know, you can turn anything into an idol. It's,
yeah.
It's the way we look at something.
Exactly right. An idol can be a person. An idol can be an abstract concept, a philosophy, or a thought. You can make an idol of your own mind. Or it can be a physical thing, like a brazen serpent. But it depends on our attitude toward it. Covetousness is idolatry, said the Apostle Paul. Money is one of the great idols of our time. Why do you think that God had Moses approach it this way, by making that brazen serpent, when he knew that this could be turned into an idol? Sherry?
I think that this brazen serpent was no more an idol at that time than the River Jordan was when Naaman had to dip 7 times in it.
It
was a matter of faith and of obedience to what God had asked.
Right.
Those two combined made it possible.
Right.
He could have made if God had said make an imaginary brazen serpent.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they had faith that there was one there and they did what God said, look upon where it was supposedly there, they might have been healed because that's what God told them to do.
Mm-hmm. When Moses set this up, most of the people didn't live close enough to see it where it was set up. They would have to come to it and look at it. And that showed their faith when they looked at it. And I have wondered why God did this, because it is a rare thing in Scripture for this type of thing to be done. But I have wondered if this was not just done for the main purpose of establishing another type of Christ. Because it's used that way in the New Testament, isn't it? In the 3rd chapter of John, this is referenced back to that as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so Jesus was going to be lifted up as well. And he made another statement later in the book of John. That was in John 3:14, and later in John 12:32. He says, if I be lifted up, I will draw all men unto me. So this brazen serpent became a type of Christ, just like Isaac was, or just like so many other things, like Joseph was, so many other things and people in the Old Testament were a type of Christ. And yet, even a type of Christ could be taken and used as an idol. And as Paul has pointed out, they did exactly that later on. Maybe I should turn over and read that one reference from 2 Kings 18, verse 4, because it shows up again after all these years. It wasn't gone. This is in the days of Hezekiah, who was a great reforming king. The northern kingdom has already gone the way of the heathen and gone into captivity. And now Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign in verse 1. Verse 2, 20 and 5 years old was he when he began to reign. He reigned 20 and 9 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Abby, and his daughter, Abby, the daughter of Zechariah. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David his father did. He removed the high places and brake the images and cut down the groves and brake in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made. For unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it. And he called it Nehustan. Nehustan means a piece of brass. Hezekiah is saying, this is just a piece of brass. What are you worshiping it for? It served its purpose. Its purpose was way back in another era, but they had kept that and made it into an idol. So that's a lesson for us. You know, the same thing was done with Gideon's apron or ephod. Not necessarily wrong at the beginning, and yet it became something that was worshipped and again had to be gotten rid of. We're strange people. We take on these things and we make of them something they were never intended to be. We blow it all out of proportion and we get out of sync with God when we allow that to happen. Do you have a comment?
Yes. What generation had passed? How many generations had passed from the time that they were bitten and to the time that they started worshiping it?
Hundreds and hundreds of years had gone by the time that Hezekiah destroyed it. Now, he said that unto that time, the writer said, unto that time they had been offering incense to it. And there's no way for us to tell how long they had been offering incense to it. But there had been hundreds of years go by. This was constructed in about the 15th century before Christ. And Hezekiah lives in about the 7th century before Christ. So that much time, an 800-year span of time approximately, goes by here from its construction to its destruction. But how long they had been worshiping it, we don't know. The impression is they'd been doing this for a while. Unto this time, they'd been offering incense unto it.
Just, you know, a month or two later in the same generation?
Most likely not, no. And that's an insidious thing about religion. It takes hundreds of years for religious traditions to develop because there's no one generation that will stand for too much of that type of change during their lifetime. We have to wait until the old people die before new steps can be taken. And then that new generation has to wait until its old people die and they can go further and further afield. We have notable examples in the world in our time of the hundreds, even thousands of years of development that have taken place to produce a system that is completely astray from God. And yet the world looks on this as Christianity. When the world thinks of Christianity, they think of the man who sits in Vatican City in many, many instances. He's just an overgrown elder, but it's taken generation upon generation over centuries and millennia to produce what that system has become. And I believe that was predicted in the Bible, and it's not a pretty prediction.
And yet, you look at any Catholic church that you walk in today, and you will find brazen serpent.
Right.
Front,
absolutely.
They feel that they go and kneel down before it and pray to it, that's going to be the first thought.
Yeah. And the councils themselves, when they projected this, have used the very word that is sometimes translated as worship for this veneration of images. And it didn't happen overnight. It took a long time for this to be brought in because when it was first broached, people were opposed to it. They came from a Jewish background and they would have nothing to do with idolatry. That had been burned out of them in Babylon. But little by little, it was brought in. And this is why we must stand for the truth of the Bible, keep ourselves familiarized with it, and take a doctrinal stand for the truth, even when that becomes unpleasant, even when it would be easier just to go along with changes that somebody wants to make. Not saying that all change is bad, because it's not all bad. But we have to be very careful about it, because what God has given us here is fixed. If you've read all of this, you have read what God has given us, and there's nothing new. We dare not make any changes in God's plan, because we don't know enough about the mind of God to do that. God knew what he wanted, and he told us what that was. So we just serve him by following him for these few years that we're here. Paul?
Really, it's just another example of how God punished people when they disobey him, or they grumble, or they complain.
Right.
We have other instances where the people were punished because they didn't do what God said.
Right.
But this particular one had something they could hold up and see. And when you can show someone something, you know, convince them that they need to look at this, you know, this is their salvation. It's a lot easier when you got something to show them.
Right. Right. And Moses had something to show them. And when they would look at that, they would get well. And this was an immature time in human civilization. Now, we live in a time where we've been given a Savior that the Lord personally has not even told us what he looked like. He purposefully lived in the days before the invention of the camera. We don't know what his hair color was. We don't know what his eye color was. We don't know how tall he was. We know very little about what his appearance would have been on purpose. So that we're not picturing him as having a physical appearance. We're picturing him spiritually in his beauty, what he is on a spiritual level. And that's the way God wants it. We not only don't need images, but it would be a shame for us to start using them. They would be a step back toward immaturity. Yeah, Chad?
You can see that today. I mean, if someone thinks they got a piece of the cross, you know.
Yeah. There have been enough pieces of the one true cross found to make a whole forest. And it started in the days of Constantine's mother, Helena. She's the one that was supposed to have found the one true cross after a very assiduous search. And often when she's pictured at all, she's pictured with the cross. And we are slipping right into apostasy with that type of thing. Marge, I think you were next.
I just had this strange question. There's a truth that I pass by all the time coming back and forth to church. And I discovered this morning they have now changed their name for about the 15th time, and they're now the Church of Christ.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm wondering, do you have any idea how many churches there are that are calling themselves the Church of Christ and teaching whatever? Because they had been, before that, Baptist.
Interesting. Well, that makes me think possibly, and I don't even know where you're talking about, but it makes me think that the possibility may be that that real estate has changed hands. That would be my first guess, because I don't find many groups changing their name to Church of Christ. That doesn't necessarily make you more popular. And most name changes, as I think Chad has well pointed out, are with a view to getting more people in, making it more palatable to a broader base. So my first guess would be, in complete ignorance, I'm guessing that somebody has purchased that, and either a Church of Christ from somewhere else has moved in there, or somebody is starting a new congregation. Maybe we can talk later about where that is. Is it over here? That way. Okay, so I have no idea what you're talking about. No, it's a superficial thought to think that we must be doing something right because we have a lot of people. I mean, that's obvious to anyone who thinks it through, I think. I mean, if you get 2,000 people, fine. But the Pope's got millions, hundreds of millions of people. Does that mean he's doing something right? The Muslims will soon have 2 billion because of high birth rates in the third world. So does that mean they're doing something right? Obviously, nobody believes that. I think people make those kind of statements without thinking them through ahead of time. Well, this is a tremendous thing. I wish we could go on, but you're good enough to come, and we like to stop somewhere near the closing time. We're already past it a little bit. Thank you. Thank you very much for your help with this, and I appreciate that comment as well. Let's do try this again. Once again, we want to conclude with the Lord's invitation. We never know the hearts of those who are present, and we want anyone here who has a need of something to bring before the congregation to feel perfectly free to bring that as we stand together and sing the number that Kevin's about to lead.